yes, it's Track Marks. One song, two veteran music journalists exploring the world of pop music. These tracks left marks. Each edition of Track Marks takes a close-up look at one classic composition in all its glory. At Track Marks, the song is king, and we have two hosts who may not always see eye to eye or ear to ear. And here they are now, Tom Zito and Joel Selvin.
Tom, what do you got for me today?
Well, I thought it would be egregious if we failed to talk to some extent about Led Zeppelin and Stairway to Heaven. You know, I would argue that not in any way, shape, or form their most interesting song, but the song that they are known
signature,
for.
Signature, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll tell you Led Zeppelin's story. In 1972, I went out on the road with them for 2 weeks to write a piece about, you know, a monstrous rock band. We were in Seattle at the Edgewater Inn. Home of the Mud Shark. And we had a noon call to fly down to Los Angeles. And I'm sitting in the lobby at noon. And the only other person that's in the lobby is this kid behind the desk who, if he was 18, that would probably be stretching it. And maybe about 10 after noon, Peter Grant, their manager, their enormous
ex-wrestler.
Ex-wrestler, that is correct. Peter Grant comes down to take care of the bill, which he always did in cash. And the kid behind the desk prints out the folios, puts them on top of the desk, and Peter Grant looks at them, and he notices that there's an odd charge on each of the folios for the four band members. There's a miscellaneous charge of $500. And Peter Grant asks the kid, what is this $500? And the kid starts to giggle. And Peter Grant, nobody to fuck around with, Peter Grant says, what's so funny, son? And the kid continues to giggle and has to explain to Peter Grant that it seems as if the night before, each of the band members had thrown the television in their room out the window and into Puget Sound, which was right neighboring the hotel. So Peter Grant reaches into his pocket and counts out another $2,000 in $100 bills. Now the kid is laughing hysterically, and Peter Grant says, what's so fucking funny? And the kid says to him, well, you know, this is sort of like the rock and roll dream. The band goes on tour, they go in their hotel rooms, and they throw their TVs out the window. I mean, what is more rock and roll like than that? And Peter Grant says to the kid, come with me. So Grant and the kid go up to the floor where Grant's room is. Peter Grant goes into his room. He reaches into his pocket again, counts out $500 bills on the desk in his room, points to the TV and says to the kid, go ahead, son, give it a heave. And to me, that has always been the definitive rock and roll story. It just doesn't get more outrageous than that.
They were the bully boys of rock. And, you know, that's how it all came to an end in Oakland with Grant and Richard Cole, another one of their road crew, beating up a kid that was working for Bill Graham. And Bill Graham had him arrested the next day. And that was the last gig before Bonham died.
Wow.
Plant's kid was killed in a car crash in Greece the next day or something like that, and the tour was canceled, and Bonham never went back on the road.
Bonham was a piece of work himself. I mean, one day I got on the plane. They had a private plane. It was a 727, and I got on the plane. I was there before anybody else, and I'm sitting on the plane. The next guy to show up is Bonham, and he walks in. He's drunk. He's stoned. God only knows what he is, but he says, who the fuck are you? And he wanders over and literally picks me up over his head like he's bench pressing some weights, walks to the front of the plane, and throws me down the stairs leading up to the plane. Meanwhile, poor Danny Goldberg, who was the PR guy for Led Zeppelin, is saying, "No, Bonzo, that's the journalist that's with us. Leave him alone." Bonzo doesn't care. But
these guys were sort of the bully boys of rock. They behaved like a pirate ship taking booty and wenches wherever they went. And they had this strange habit just stealing other people's compositions, recording them, and claiming they wrote them.
Certainly Led Zeppelin was not unique in that regard. But
no, I think they were unique. I've never seen a band that did an entire album of covers and claimed to have written every one of them.
Fair enough. I mean, I do think that, you know, the White Boy Blues Band borrowed so much stuff from the classic black
borrowed blues artists. Is borrowed. When you take a song and use the intonation and take it note for note and use every lyric, that's not borrowing.
Fair enough. And probably no Led Zeppelin song does that more than Bring It On Home. I mean, it's just almost a note for note copy of the original. A note-for-note copy of the original, and they never gave him credit for it.
Oh, they did.
After the lawsuit.
But that was a Willie Dixon song that was recorded by Sonny Boy Williamson. What about Black Mountainside? That's on the first album. Jimmy Page claims to have written it. Burt Jansch disagrees. And the reason he didn't sue is because there was a traditional basis for this song that sort of precluded him being able to claim a complete copyright. But I mean, Page is frank about admiring Burt Jansch in interviews. He just doesn't mention that he nicked his song too. And then there's Whole Lot of Love. Whole Lot of Love, that was the breakthrough song for Led Zeppelin II. Really, just a massive hit. And nobody mentioned that it was taken straight from a Muddy Waters record. They claim to have been the writers on the album. And then there's Dazed and Confused, which is probably the most blatant of them all. Jake Holmes was a performer in the Village, and Page saw him at a club and heard him play Dazed and Confused, and that was all she wrote.
As to where I am at, feel like a mouse and you act like a cat. I'm dazed and confused, hanging on by a thread. I'm being abused, I'd be better off dead, did I? Can't stand this tease and I'm starting to crack. You're out to get me, you're on the right track.
He worked it up with the Yardbirds, and when they recorded it with the Yardbirds, it shows up without an author credit. Nobody wrote it.
I'm being confused, did it stay or did it go? I'm being abused, and I think I should go.
Then when it shows up on Led Zeppelin, ha, Jimmy Page wrote it. Now, for some reason, Holmes did not sue until 2010. And at that point, of course, he won. The credit now reads, Jimmy Page, inspired by Jake Holmes. I mean, inspired, it's a note-for-note copy. No.
Certainly for many, many years, may still be true, I don't know, but for many years, Stairway to Heaven was the single most played track on FM radio.
Oh, it was the sound of the 70s by itself.
Yeah. And
too bad they didn't write it.
Yeah, they stole it, as they stole much of their material. The Stairway to Heaven lawsuit was a fascinating lawsuit because if you followed it, it was so blatantly clear, stolen it from Spirit. Prevailed in the lawsuit and Spirit lost, which made no sense to me.
Oh, I understand. Because I attended the John Fogerty plagiarism suits. And I think Fogerty was as guilty of plagiarizing the song that in question as Led Zeppelin was. But he got up on this witness stand, he put a guitar on his lap, he turned and faced the jury, gave him a little concert, charmed them. How could they come back with a verdict against him? Plant and Page were in that courtroom every day. Randy, California, dead and in the ground.
Thank you. All it glitters is gold, and she's buying the stairway to heaven. When she gets there, she knows if the stores are all closed, with the word she can get what she came for. She's buying a stairway to heaven. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have two meanings. In a tree by the brook, there's a songbird who sings. Sometimes all of our thoughts come. Thank you.
don't understand. It's not like these weren't creative musicians that didn't have an ability to create material their own. There's plenty of evidence that they do. And the only authentic explanation for why they keep coming back to this thievery is because they made a lot of money doing it. And, of course, copyrights are the biggest revenue-producing part of your record. And why do you want to share it with Muddy Waters? Maybe you just make Muddy catch you and then settle up later. And you still end up ahead. I don't know what the deal is. But at the point where this band is doing this so often and it becomes such a part of their strategy, their creative strategy, you got to figure that it's not an accident.
Hard to argue with your point.
Another good one, Tom.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Thanks, Joel, and thanks, Tom. There you have it for today's Track Marks. Many more to come from that ever-expanding universe of music, music, music. Join your hosts, Joel Selvin and Tom Zito, as they take on the world of pop music, one song at a time, right here on Track Marks.